Welcome once again to our series, The Universal Call to Holiness, Wholeness, Wholesomeness, or the Call of All to Be Like Jesus, the Way, the Truth, and the Life, to be like God, since we are made in His image and the likeness of God, according to the book of Genesis. So we've been talking about sin, original sin, mortal sin, that brings death-dealing to our immortal soul, not can't kill our soul, but it kills God's life in our soul. We've talked about mortal sin, death-dealing sin, and then venial sin, which is smaller sins that can bring sickness and weakness to our spiritual life. We're on that in that situation now. We're going to talk about the stages of holiness, or wholeness as a human being, that the great writers, spiritual writers of the church, have distinguished in particularly three separate stages. And just like there's stages in human growth, childhood, adolescence, and adulthood, there are stages in our spiritual growth. So I'm Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus of St. Patrick's Catholic Church, and my guest once again is Ron Eldred, Professor of Religion and World History at John Paul II Catholic High, which is on the campus here at St. Patrick's at 19th and Poplar. Ron, welcome once again, and if we could begin with the stages of holiness that have been characterized by the great spiritual writers down through the centuries.
Yes, before I actually get into the three stages, you mentioned who some of these spiritual writers are so that our listeners will know who we're talking about. There are literally hundreds of them, I guess, you know, over the centuries, but St. Bernard of Clairvaux comes to mind. He was one of the doctors of the church, also one of the 33 doctors. St. Francis of Assisi, he was not a doctor of the church. In fact, he didn't write much, if I recall right.
How about St. Francis de Sales?
St. Francis de Sales was a great one. Certainly in the 17th century, we have St. Teresa of Avila that we mentioned several times, and another contemporary friend of hers, about 25 years younger than she, but the Carmelite priest, St. John of the Cross. Also around that time, we have St. Ignatius of Loyola. And there, as I said, they're just literally, you hate to pick out any because there were so many great ones. When you get down toward the modern era, there's some great professors of theology that come to mind. People like, for example, Juan Arantero, who was a Spanish mystic and one of the great spiritual directors and writers of all time. He taught a man by the name of Reginald Garrigou Lagrange, who was taught at the Angelicum for many, many years. Has some outstanding writings on this subject, probably the most outstanding modern writings on the spiritual life, the kind of stages of holiness that we're going to be talking about here. Incidentally, Garrigou Lagrange was John Paul II's doctoral dissertation advisor.
Oh.
In fact, John Paul did his doctorate in theology on St. John of the Cross under the direction of Garrigou Lagrange. All other people like Edward Lean, Louis Boyer, there are quite a few other modern writers, but all of them deal with this this idea of the stages of holiness. This is an old idea. It's not something that's that just come into being in the last 15 or 20 years. And so what we're actually sharing with our readers here is been a part of the tradition of the church
for a long time. I don't want to catch you off guard, but where do you think would you know where it started, this division of the three stages, the purgative, illuminative, and unitive way?
I don't know if you can go all the way back to, let's say, St. Bernard.
Okay, that'd be about 12th century.
Yeah, 12th century, to find exactly those stages. I have done some reading in that area. In fact, I forgot to mention Father Jordan Ullman, that we've talked about and have quoted on several occasions already in our series. But he has a book that tells the history of spirituality, and you'd have to go to a book like his, and which I've read it, but I just don't exactly recall. But I'm sure, almost certain that you would find the answer to that question in his book on the history of
Catholic
spirituality.
I know that you like Jordan Allman, the white-robed Dominican.
Yes.
Order of preachers. Well, let's go to the three stages then, having told us, and I didn't really know that all those people were sort of involved in the development of the understanding of the stages of the spiritual life.
Well, the church has long identified these three stages, the purgative way, the illuminative way, and finally the unity way. And each of these in order involves becoming progressively more intimate with God. For as the Catechism, and here we're talking about the Catechism of the Catholic Church now, says, quote, spiritual progress tends toward ever more intimate union with Christ, end of quote. And so not what we're going to do then the rest of this session is to look at these different stages. And the first one we're going to look at is the purgative way.
Okay, and if I could just repeat what you just said, the spiritual progress is becoming closer to Jesus, more a friend to Jesus in kind of common parlance, we can grow in friendship with anybody, and particularly we can grow in friendship, and that's what holiness or wholeness is in Catholic understanding.
And what we're describing here is what great spiritual directors and people who themselves have achieved these things. Every one of these people that I mentioned had achieved these stages of holiness and eventually achieved union with God. The first one, the purgative way, is the stage of spiritual development when one decides that he or she is going to try to lead a life in accordance with the will of God. That is, to obey God's commandments. That's the first step. To conversion, one might say, and the first step toward holiness.
That's the basis beginning. I talked to a middle-aged woman 2 days ago, and she said, Father, I'm a revert to the Catholic Church. Said, I was out of the church for 20 years, and now I come back, and I'm so glad to be back home. And I just can't tell you how happy I am. And she was really starting again, sort of at the purgative way.
Yes.
I'm going to get rid of sin in my life, and I'm going to start on the road to following the footsteps of Jesus.
But well, keep in mind what purgative means. It means to cleanse, to wash. And so that's really the first stage of starting to take a spiritual bath, I guess.
And she said, I made a good confession, and that's the normal way. As Catholics,
right.
We believe that we make a good start again, start over again, if we've been away from God or been away from Jesus.
Well, Father John Hardin, and we've mentioned Father Hardin here many times. In fact, we could certainly put him in this illustrious list that we had a while ago, one of the greatest catechists, I think, probably the 20th century. And as you mentioned in one of our earlier sessions, John Paul himself had given him the commission of doing what he could in this country to improve catechesis, that is, you know, the teaching of the Catholic faith to at all ages.
And passing on the light of
right,
the faith.
He wrote several catechisms and for different audiences and what have you. But he defines the purgative way as, quote, the primary stage of mental prayer, and we'll get to that later, this idea of mental prayer, according to the teaching of Saints Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross, the soul's chief concern in this stage of perfection, or mansions, as St. Teresa calls the stages of spiritual development.
Or sort of rooms going from one room to another, getting closer to the circle, and center of the circle.
The center of the circle is an awareness. Now, this is real critical here. The soul's chief concern in this stage of perfection is an awareness of its sins, sorrow for the past, and a desire to expiate the offenses against God. This comes right out of Father Hardin's catechism called the Modern, actually it's his Catholic dictionary. He also has a very good dictionary, one of the best Catholic dictionaries. It's probably about a 700 or 800 page book, but almost every major concept in the Catholic faith is in this book, so it's a very handy
It's still available.
Oh, yeah. You can buy it in paperback now, in fact.
Oh, really?
For, I think, about 10 or 12 bucks, something like that.
To give our new Catholic bookstore in town a advertisement.
I wouldn't be surprised if...
Our Lady of the Wabash on 14th in Ohio.
Right. The Purgative Way is comparable to what St. Teresa, that is St. Teresa of Avila, calls the first three mansions on the upward climb in spiritual perfection. If you read her books, you'll find that she describes in some detail these, you know, each of these mansions and what one, you know, has to do and what it is doing and this, that, and the other. What's happening in their spiritual
life.
In their prayer life, right, and things like that.
Rejection of sin, temptation.
Yes. And the principal form of prayer at this stage is the verbal prayer, which we will explain in some later session, although persons may be becoming novices in mental prayer. And to simplify our discussion, we will discuss these different types of prayer later. If you try to handle the stages and the and explaining their meaning, and at the same time, I've tried it before with students, and at the same try to explain the different forms of prayer in any detail, it begins to kind of fuzz over too much. So I found it over many times of trying to teach this subject to do the stages first, then come back and relate the stages to the different types of prayer.
Okay, sounds like a good idea. So we talked about the purgative stage, being purgated. That's where we get the term purgatory, being purified in the next life if we're not sufficiently purified in this life.
Yeah, purge just means to cleanse. So people get the idea that purgatory is a dirty word. It's really the opposite.
It's the cleanup of
right.
Spiritual dirtiness.
Yeah.
Okay, what is the second stage according to these great spiritual directors and masters?
Well, again, let's quote Father Hardin. He tells us that the illuminative way, quote, is an intermediary stage between purification and union on the path to Christian perfection. That the main feature of the illuminative way is an enlightenment of the mind in the ways of God, and a clear understanding of His will in one's state of life. Let me repeat that. That the main feature of the illuminative way is an enlightenment of the mind in the ways of God, and a clear understanding of His will in one's state of life. In other words, that doesn't start right off when you start taking your bath, your spiritual bath, that at the purgative stage. Now one has moved into a higher stage of holiness, and
I'm really trying to not just fight off my sins or get out of mortal sin and work against my venial or smaller sins, but I'm really trying to focus on being more like Jesus, illuminated, as the Holy Father, you know, gave us the new mysteries in the Rosary, the luminous mysteries, those that enlighten us. We get a clearer understanding. And I liked your definition there, or Father Hardin's definition, according to one's state of life, because each of us is called to holiness or wholeness, wholesomeness, in a different way. The Carmelite nuns at down at Allendale spend 6 hours a day in prayer. Most mothers or fathers of family can't spend 6 hours a day in prayer. So we have different means to get to the same goal.
I think that the purgative accentuates the negative.
Okay.
You know, we're trying to wash away, we're trying to change our life, we're trying to turn
break
life
free
around. Right. And I think you made a good statement there a while ago, that once you get into the illuminated stage, though, this accentuates the positive. This is when you're starting, in other words, you made some real progress, and you're not doing a lot of the bad things you did before, and you're beginning to get rid of some of your old bad habits, and you're beginning to develop a lot of good habits or virtues. And you're beginning to become more like Jesus, and so that becomes your goal. This is what I mean when we say you accentuate the positive when you get into the illuminative stage. You're trying to be like Jesus.
I like that. It's a good modern statement. Eliminate the negative, purgative, and accentuate the positive in the illuminative.
I'd like to make one more comment before we go on to the unity. Even the person who has reached the stage of perfection in the spiritual life practices both verbal and mental prayer and begins to experience various degrees of contemplation or experiences of union with God. As I said a while ago, we'll come back to that in a whole session and explain what we mean by the verbal, the meditative, and the contemplative forms of prayer. And how they're related to the stages of holiness.
As we make some progress towards God, then our prayer, our conversation with God, our communication with God, which is what prayer is, listening and talking to God, begins to develop also in a deeper way. Okay, what about the third stage, or the unitative stage?
The unity stage is the third and final stage of Christian perfection beyond the purgative and the illuminative. And of this stage, Father Hardin says, quote, its principal feature is a more or less constant awareness of God's presence and a habitual disposition of conformity to the will of God. Let me repeat that. Its principal feature is a more or less constant awareness of God's presence and a habitual disposition of conformity to the will of God. And although this is commonly regarded as the last stage in the spiritual life, the spiritual directors and the church certainly recognizes that the three traditional levels of progress in the holiness are not necessarily chronological. They tend to overlap. In other words, one can still be in the purgative stage, yet begin to take on elements of the illuminative stage. One can be in the illuminative stage, and maybe a little bit of the purgative stage. I don't think we ever completely get out of that. And begin to experience some unifying, communication with God, a more intimate union kind of thing with God while we're still in the illuminative stage.
So we can certainly distinguish them intellectually as three distinct stages.
And that's what you do in teaching, you know. You develop these little models, you know, and but they're supposed to reflect reality as much as possible, but obviously they're abstractions from reality, but they do help us, I don't think we can learn anything without analogy, without metaphor, without things of that sort.
And one of the things that I think it helps spiritual directors to help people, what are their needs now? Where they seem to be in their spiritual journey towards God and towards imitating Jesus?
Certainly, that's why a spiritual director is so critical. Sometimes it could be your confessor. More often than not, you would think they would be. Although lots of confessors don't have the ability to be, you know, spiritual directors. There are even some lay people that I think probably are good spiritual directors.
Well, I think Pope John Paul II was talking about this a friend, this lay friend whom he learned so much from. I'm trying to think of the guy's name.
When he was a young man, there was some man, I've forgotten his name. I think you're thinking the same person, who had a tremendous influence on him. He was a tailor, I think,
yes,
by profession.
Yes, he was a tailor.
Yeah.
But he had a tremendous prayer life.
What got him started, actually, John Paul, into that mystical type of prayer.
Prayer and
the type
theology.
Of thing we're talking about here.
Right. I can't think of his name either offhand, but he was mentioning recently what a profound influence this Polish layman, a tailor, ordinary workman, had on his spiritual development, his spiritual life. Okay, what happens to those who are able to reach a unitive stage of wholeness or holiness or perfection?
Well, spiritual directors tell us that the person who has reached the unity stage prays ceaselessly. By employing all the forms of prayer, verbal, meditative, and especially contemplative. And contemplative prayer is a form of prayer that God provides for those who are especially holy. and enjoy a close friendship with him. As I said a while ago, we'll discuss those different stages or different types of prayer in another session.
I liked your emphasis, Ron, just a moment ago on what Father Hardin said about that we, a unity of way, we live in the presence of God, and we're always focused on trying to find his will. There are many saints, modern saints. I think Francis Xavier Cabrini, what a person who seemed to live in the presence of God. Sister Catherine Drexel, I think, was described by the Indians that she worked with as the woman who prays always. Well, she obviously wasn't always praying a rosary or folding her hands, but kind of living in that atmosphere. I'm in the presence of God, and I'm sustained by him. In him I live and move and have my being. So it's a simple but profound description of a sense of I'm in union with God all the time.
There isn't a saint that I know of, and I don't think there probably ever was one, that they're known for, you know, their charitable works, like you mentioned, Catherine Drexel, who was a very, very wealthy Philadelphian woman who gave her fortune, and her fortune at that time would be worth over $1 billion today.
Is that right? I know it's humongous.
Yes, it was. It wasn't a little. It was 150, 200 million then, and we're talking about, you know, the beginning of the century.
Right.
So there would be well over, probably several $1 billion today. She gave all of her fortune to the religious order that she helped found, and then of course they taught, set up schools for Black Americans, Indians,
Native Americans, particularly,
and
those two,
yes,
groups of people.
And we know these saints for all these corporal and spiritual works of mercy, and also for their development of heroic virtue and holiness, but at the same time they also live very intimate lives of prayer, and that's what made me think of that.
It reminds me, because I was talking to some missionary sisters of charity a couple of days ago, but Mother Teresa always said that she meets Jesus at Holy Mass and in the Eucharist and in adoration, and then she goes out into the streets and she meets Jesus in the faces of the dispossessed and the poor and the sick and the dying and abandoned children. So for her, it was going from one Jesus to the other. And that's what our Lord told us, that whatever you do to the least of these, my brothers, you do to me. But one thing I sure like to emphasize is that Mother Teresa would not have been able to do what she did in the slums of the world if she didn't have that intense prayer life. That was her engine. She was not just a social worker. She was a person who got the fire of Jesus in prayer and then took it out into loving care for others.
She always required some minimal number of hours a day for her nuns to pray, because that gives them obviously the strength that they need to go out and do these spiritual and corporal works of mercy.
And it's a warning, I think, to all of us, because I can get so busy in supposedly helping others, and then I neglect my own relationship to the Lord, and pretty soon I'm not that interested in helping others. I think it was Pope John Paul II who said, a person must be careful in doing the work of the Lord, not to neglect the Lord of the work. And that's the same thing as you were saying the great saints have always taught us.
Well, even those we're talking about, the doctors of the church, the great spiritual writers and doctrinal writers, take St. Thomas Aquinas comes to mind. He's known for his great intellect. And all these wonderful books that he wrote, but he also spent hours every day in prayer, which gave him the strength and the probably the infused knowledge at times, or at least the ability to use his intellect more efficiently to sit down and write all those wonderful things that God wanted him to write.
Not another wonderful example. Well, perhaps we could go on to the great Paul, mystic and apostle of the early church, he talks about praying without ceasing. That may need a little explanation.
Yes, this is found in 1 Thessalonians 5:17. St. Paul's injunction to pray without ceasing does not mean, though, that a person at this stage of spiritual development goes around mumbling prayers all the time. In fact, persons in the unity way, or the unity stage of holiness, the highest stage of holiness, probably say fewer verbal prayers than persons in less developed stages of holiness, because they are living their lives in full conformance with God's will and have a constant awareness of his presence. They live in union with God. Because they are in such close union with God, their lives become ceaseless prayer.
Okay.
The person in the purgative stage, they have to kind of force themselves to think about God, to be aware of God's presence.
Because I'm fighting off of the world, the flesh, and the
devil.
Yes.
But as a person makes progress in the spiritual life, and as they get into the illuminative stage and various aspects of the unity stage, then God makes them himself more and more aware of his presence. I don't know too much about that. this is what the spiritual directors tell us.
We can read about it from these great spiritual masters.
But at least for people, I think, in the purgative or in the illuminative stage, it becomes easier. More often you're thinking about, and sometimes this could lead to verbal prayer. You know, sometimes people say these little short ejaculations during the day.
Sure.
Or as they pass a church, they think of God, or Christ and the Blessed Sacrament, or it depends on the kind of work you do. As you said a while ago, as you're trying to fend off the world and the flesh and the devil, a lot of times it's very difficult to be thinking about, things of God. But
I heard a poetic statement about, the church has always thought of incense because of the psalm, "Let my prayer rise like incense before the face of God," and that the incense is a kind of a visible form of prayer rising to God. But that wherever we are, in our car, or at our computer, or in the factory, or in the kitchen, the incense of prayer should be rising from our lives. Now, that could be misunderstood. People may think the house is on fire or something, but it's merely a poetic statement. But always like that it's not just when we're kneeling in prayer before the Lord exposed in the golden monstrance and the Blessed Sacrament, but that whatever we do in word or in work, do all for the glory of God.
And later in the session, another session, we're going to get into prayer, and it'll probably take us about 3 half-hour sessions to discuss that topic. But we're going to address the topic of praying ceaselessly. More specifically, what does that involve? How can we actually do that?
Sure.
Give some practical advice on that.
Okay. We've only got a little time. You want to say anything about what happens when we reach the summit of the unitive way, the summit of holiness, or as Teresa of Avila calls it, the seventh mansion?
Well, I think few of us ever reach the heights of holiness in this life, but what, as you said, St. Teresa called the seventh mansion, and St. John of the Cross called, fittingly, the summit of the mountain, that is Mount Carmel. But the summit is a place where the will of the person achieving the height is one with the will of God. He or she has entered into the innermost life of the Trinity, and this is what it means to say that we share in the divinity of God. St. Thomas Aquinas told his sister, when she asked him how she could achieve holiness in union with God, that the only reason that people don't reach it, St. Thomas answered, said that because people don't desire it.
We're going to have to close with that good statement, Ron. May God bless you always and in always.